Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. I want to turn our attention, before I let you scoot, my friend, to the tragic narrative story of Tyre Nichols, murdered by five black police officers. And the stories that are starting to emerge here as we, again, grapple with Black history, talk about the modern day enforcement of law and order on the Black community, and how that really is not that much different from what emerged, you know, in Reconstruction with the creation of police departments for the purposes of curtailing African Americans' social behavior. What's your take on the Tyre Nichols case, and specifically the imagery of five black police officers on the screen in connection with his murder?
So the first thing I'll say, you've heard me say this, Michael, for the audience to understand, I am a police abolitionist. I think we should end policing as it currently exists. It does not work. It does not work consistently. It does not work effectively. I say this across the board. The way that we conceive of policing, the way that we organize policing, the way that we fund policing does not lead to the results that we want. We have decades of evidence that spending more money on police does not reduce crime. We have the average police department in America only solves about 46% of homicides. Homicides, only about 46%. If your average high school was only graduating 46% of their students, we would shut it down. Mm-hmm. If your average hospital was only delivering 46% of the babies that were supposed to be born there, we would shut down the hospital. Why do we tolerate such consistent incompetence in dumping money into policing that doesn't give us the results that we want? So that being said, to go specifically mm-hmm. into what you see in Memphis, it is a quintessential example of the micro problem, what I'm saying about how policing doesn't work. You know, I used to love this show on FX called The Shield.
Oh, yeah. Mackie, I remember that, yes.
Love that show. One of the best shows in TV, one of the best endings. That and Homicide: Life on the Street are two of the best endings of any TV shows in history. And, you know, the idea of these strike teams, these hyper-aggressive cowboy police officers.
In this case, the Scorpions, as they were known.
In this case, the Scorpions. But think about it. They're called the Scorpions in Memphis. They call them the Red Dogs under this police chief when she was in Atlanta. In Pittsburgh, they call them the Jump Out Boys. These sound like gangs.
Yeah.
They're gang names. Red Dogs, Jump Out Boys, Scorpions? What do we get? The Sharks and the Jets and the Pink Ladies? What the hell?
It's true. It's true.
Right? Yeah. So when you've got police officers who have nomenclature that is indistinguishable from street gangs, and then you empower them with an unnecessary amount of weapons and no oversight, this is what you get writ large. And it's happening all over America. and it's happening to white people, and it's happening to black people, and black people, and more black people. And we've seen that since George Floyd was murdered in 2020, that violence, that the shooting of unarmed civilians has gone up in America, that the spending on police departments has gone up in America, and the crime problem hasn't been fixed. So that's where this comes from.
Right.
Now, the fact that these guys are all black and Qs, three of them, I don't care. Because one thing that anybody should understand, Michael understands this, anybody out there, is that if there's one thing that American history has shown us, it's that when you put minorities in charge of white supremacist institutions, the person is way more likely to change than the institution.
It's true.
So I don't care how many black cops you throw in. KRS-One told me about that 30 years ago. Black cop. Listen to the song, right? So,
I'm, let's take it back. Let's take it back into the days of slavery. There's a difference between the African American in the house and the African American in the field.
Yeah. So all those things don't. I'm not shocked by this. I will say this though, and this is kind of odd. I interviewed Philip Atiba Goff on my podcast last week. Really, really smart guy. He's at Yale. It's the Center for Policing Equity. We had a great conversation on my podcast on Slate. And one of the things that he laid out, I had never heard of this before. I asked him, I was like, look, do demographics matter with police, right? We always talk about, if we could diversify the cops, whatever. And he said, they have one instance of this being the case. This shocked me. They have 3 years of data in the city of Chicago, and they looked at all demographics of police officers. They have enough Latino, African-American, and white officers. What they found, when you control for time on the force, location, experience, everything else like that, Michael, guess which demographic of police officers was the least likely to use excessive force? Take a guess.
White police officers.
White women. Shocked the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, now we don't know if it's transferable, but in the city of Chicago, they found that, like, by a measurable amount, that white female police officers were the least likely to use excessive force against black people. Who knew?
Right? Yeah.
So what it also speaks to is this idea that even when we want to say that diversifying officers is necessarily going to lead to different results, I mean, white female cops are still beating brothers to death.
Right.
They just happen to do so at a rate slightly less aggressive.
Right.
Yay. You know,
I'll sleep better tonight knowing that.
Yes. You know, I get pulled over by a Karen instead of a Keisha. Am I supposed to feel safer? I still got pulled over. So, you know, but again, what it speaks to is this larger problem that we have about policing. And I also say this sort of quickly because, you know, it is sad and it's tragic. I've talked to my students at Morgan State about this. You know, when you look at this kind of behavior, is never isolated. So that's why I don't even get that excited about these five guys being, you know, being fired and going on trial, because it's like, that ain't the first time they did that. It's not.
Yeah.
They were too good at it.
Right.
There's 27 other people that saw this, right? There's 27 other people that have seen previous activities that they've engaged in. That's why I say you can't reform this. You have to tear this stuff up from the roots and build something new. We can't say that we can't do it. We've done it before in America. We used to have a Department of War, and then we got rid of the Department of War because we realized it wasn't effective. And people at the time were like, how are we going to live without the Department of War? We came up with something called the Department of Defense. And you know what? It seemed to work throughout the Cold War. We didn't get nuked, right?
Yeah.
So you can't tell me that this country lacks the creativity, the capacity, or the ingenuity to come up with something different than what we call policing today, because this doesn't work.
Are we just at this point too heavily invested in the concept, the idea of policing, police force, Blue Lives Matter, the blue line? People have this sort of knee-jerk reaction to any suggestions like you've made that somehow you're now anti-police because you want to reform the system. How do you begin to overcome those hurdles, particularly when you have a feckless political leadership on both sides, too scared on one hand, too aggressive on the other, to actually begin to cleave out the kind of reform, as your example noted, between, you know, a Department of War and the Department of Defense, as an example, to move from sort of an antebellum police narrative formed for the explicit purpose of rough riding black folks to something that is actually authentic, genuine policing to keep communities, regardless of color, safe?
Well, first you start with money. I mean, it does take political courage, but you start with money and you start with numbers. Your average state, you got way the hell more teachers than you have cops, right? Right. And what your fear is losing the police unions. They ain't that many damn cops, okay? You've got a better bet of funding, making friends with, and using the organization of teachers unions or nurses unions or some other union to counter the police. So much of this is about political leadership being like, oh my God, I don't want to piss off the police unions. It ain't that many. It ain't that many. There's other unions that you can make friends with. Mm-hmm. The other thing is you start passing laws to hold police departments as accountable as other agencies. You stop allowing them to run up the budget with these insurance programs that they get massive, 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 massive insurance coverage every time they make a mistake. I pointed this out 6 or 7 years ago with the city of Pittsburgh. On average, the city of Pittsburgh has like about 1,100 police officers, right? The taxpayers were paying an average of $1,000 a year per police officer in that city when you broke it down for all the penalties and settlements they were paying for police brutality. These police departments are having $8, $9, $10 million settlements.
Right.
For police brutality. What the hell are you doing? So I would go in politically. I would use my power to say, look, I'm going to empower the teachers unions because I'm going to need y'all's help. I'm going to empower you nurses unions. I'm going to need y'all's help. And then we're going to fight to pass some laws to rein in these police departments. We don't even have to cut your funding. We have to cut the opportunities that you have to keep yourselves from being held accountable. We will introduce licensure where you can take a cop's license so you can't just go from one place to the next. And we will then slowly but surely implement, kind of like what you have in St. Louis, completely different intervention programs for community problems so that you don't even freaking need the police. There are times where you need somebody with a gun. You know when you need that? In a hostage situation or a bank robbery. But 9 times out of 10, police show up after crimes have been committed. They don't need guns. They're just investigating. Half the time, police, when they end up pulling people over, this is what they did when they recognized in Minneapolis. Minneapolis had been pulling back from police funding long before what happened with George Floyd. And you know what they recognized? That the majority of their money was being spent and the majority of their cases and instances and complaints about police brutality were about the police beating up homeless people. So how about we offer free heated tents on the streets? And they lowered their police instances of violence against citizens by 20%. Mm-hmm. There are ways to fix this stuff. And again, I'm not a reformer. I'm an abolitionist. But I just ran out three different things that you could
do.
So
if you abolish it, what do you replace it with?
You replace it with a public safety force.
And what do they do?
So they are much more targeted. Use the same micro-targeting that you use, the same micro-targeting you use in marketing. So you specifically categorize events and send off intervention forces based on events and concerns. A lot of time is wasted. A lot of money and resources are wasted by having police just randomly patrol. You know what cops do when they patrol. They're on the computer. They're talking on the phone. They're seeing their mistresses. The vast majority of times, they're not actually solving anything. And we pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for these police cars and these officers to just be riding around all day. Scale back on that. Get yourself intervention forces that have trained individuals. You have people with mental health problems. Why are you sending cops? We have orderlies in mental health institutions. Train orderlies on police intervention and send them. This person has a mental health problem. Those guys are big. They're strong. They can take people in. They know how to use non-lethal weapons. There, you took 3 mentally ill homeless people off the street, didn't have to shoot nobody, didn't have to pay a cop $400,000 a year to do it. You can have intervention forces. We have a domestic violence call. We're going to send an intervention force, one officer with a weapon, a negotiator, and a counselor. People are like, oh, hey, isn't that way more expensive? Actually, it isn't. Because if you look at the number of instances where domestic violence cases end up turning into violence, people get shot, then you have lawsuits against the department. Overall, it ends up being cheaper. Mm-hmm. If I can send somebody to the door and say, hey, I'm the interventionist. Let me talk you two down. Can I put you guys in separate places? If you do not listen to me, there's a guy in the car with a gun. I bet you can get those people to walk outside the house.
Yeah.
What happens when you send a police officer in full gear to a house when you make a domestic violence fall? That woman gets killed. That man gets scared. That man gets angry. And I tell people this all the time, sort of closing this, when they think that they don't have any other options, that these violence things are necessary. You want to know how we can tell for sure that police violence is out of control and it's a matter of just how mismanaged it is and how we can do something different? All you have to do is look at military police. How often do we hear about military police killing people? Almost never.
Right.
Because they don't. And yet military police are encountering people who are trained killers. If you're a military police officer on a base, that means almost every house you go to, there's trained soldiers in there.
Right.
Yet somehow they manage to arrest people and bring them in all the time and no one dies. Why is that? Even though they know they're dealing with trained people, people often with weapons. Because they inherently respect the humanity of the people who they're encountering. Because that military police officer goes to that house and sees those two people on the front porch fighting. It's like, they took the same oath as me. We're all soldiers. I'm going to do everything I can to bring this person in because they fight the same wars I do.
Right, right.
It ain't a training issue. It's the culture issue. So you got to tear it up and build something new.
I'll give you the props on the culture piece. I want to have you back to talk a little bit more and explore, because I find your analysis and conclusions really interesting to pursue. I'm not an abolitionist, but I am very much a reformer. Mm-hmm. And I've advocated, as you just indicated, along the same lines of building within our police department less need for police intervention and more need for cultural and societal intervention with health professionals, mental health professionals, you know, people who deal in domestic violence, make them an active part of this. They become the first responders.
Yes.
The police are the backup, as yep. you noted, in case people just want to show their ass, like my mama would say.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the law enforcement part when there's a breakdown in the domestic, cultural, et cetera, piece. So I'd love to have that conversation, because I think a lot of times people would hear what a Dr. Jason Johnson is saying and go, you know, he's anti-police. He's not anti-police. He's pro-community. And there's a big difference. And it's how we can better integrate policing into the community in a way that is less militarized, less interventionist, more responsive based on the need in front of it.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Retaliation with Julie Roginski is a weekly podcast focused on the stories of women who have spoken truth to power and have persevered despite the costs. It shares the experiences of courageous people who have sometimes been celebrated, but too often castigated for standing up for themselves and for others. Each week, I examine the structures, systems, and culprits responsible for perpetuating and promoting workplace toxicity. You'll hear stories from female celebrities, music label executives, politicians, police officers, and many others as we examine the cultural reevaluations, policy changes, and legal steps that can finally bring an end to the ongoing attack on women in this country and around the world. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.